Dale. Good evening. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. It was on the 10th of April of this last year, when Paul Volcker, who's part, certainly one of the people who's part of the ruling banking elite that controlled the world, formerly with the Chase Manhattan Bank, formerly the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, wrote an article that appeared in the Washington Post, and this is what he said. Under the placid surface, there are disturbing trends, huge imbalances, disequilibria risks, call them what you will. Altogether, the circumstances seem to me as dangerous as and intractable as any I can remember, and I can remember quite a lot. What really concerns me is that there seems to be so little willingness or capacity to do much about it. Personal savings in the United States have practically disappeared. To be sure, businesses have begun to rebuild their financial reserves, but in the space of a few years, the federal deficit has come to offset that source of national savings. What holds it all together is a massive and growing flow of capital from abroad, running to more than $2 billion every working day and growing. More recently, we've become more dependent on foreign central banks, particularly in China and Japan and elsewhere in East Asia. The difficulty is that this seemingly comfortable pattern can't go on indefinitely. I don't know of any country that has managed to consume and invest 6% more than it produces for long. The United States is absorbing about 80% of the net flow of international capital, and at some point, both central banks and private institutions will have their fill of dollars. I don't know whether change will come with a bang or a whimper, whether sooner or later, but as things stand, it's more likely than not that it will be financial crises rather than policy foresight that will force the change. One of the most powerful men in the world is saying, he doesn't know whether it's coming sooner or later with a bang or a whimper, but there's going to be a financial crisis that faces America. And as our war is, as our attention is focused on what's going on in Iraq and all sorts of other issues, most people are not paying much attention to our financial affairs. Oh, they may have noticed that gold spiked up last week, and silver spiked up, and then they dropped right off again. Maybe everything's just fine. There's nothing to worry about. But, well, I think that when Paul Volcker puts out a warning like he did, we should all be very concerned about the financial future of this country, because if you destroy the financial system, you destroy the savings of every American. You destroy their pensions. You destroy the source of their health care. You destroy their annuities, their CDs, their bank deposits, everything they've worked their life to save. And it's happened over and over again throughout history. With us this evening, our good friend Ron Brown, who does support Radio Liberty. Hi, Ron. How are you doing?
Good to be with you, Dr. Stan.
Well, what's your take on what's really going on in our country financially today?
Well, I think, you know, what the quote you just gave kind of leads up to the real, we're at that breaking point where the foreigners just cannot continue or will not continue to finance our ever-increasing deficits. I don't know if you saw it, but the trade deficit for November just came out at $83 billion in 1 month.
And they're talking, you know, it sounds like it's we're moving towards a deficit that's going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of about $700 billion, maybe even more than that for the year. What's the latest figures?
Well, yeah, we're over that. We're probably approaching $800 to $900 billion. And we're just reaching a breaking point, and that's what the markets are telling us. You know, over the last 2 weeks or so, gold jumped up. What was it, about $50, $60, went from 485 to got up to as high as 540 intraday early this week, or was it late last week?
I think it was late last week. It was late last week on Friday. They just dumped it. It really peaked out last Friday, and then it's been in sort of a free fall since then. But how much of that is real, and how much of that's manipulated?
Well, the dips are manipulated. The bankers who are trying to hold this house of cards together will do everything in their power to keep gold from just spinning out of control, because that reflects a repudiation of their currency, or a lack of confidence in the currency. So what they do is they just pick points at which they come in and ambush the markets, and they do it basically in the futures market, where they're dealing with paper contracts, and they can just come in and start selling until they force the people on the other side of the equation to capitulate and cover their long position, which means they have to sell. So it's just a bear raid. It creates a margin massacre, which drives the price down very, very quickly, allows the inside bankers to cover some of their short positions, which are massive. In other words, gold or silver that they have sold, which they don't have to deliver against these contracts. And so it's just manipulation of the market that way. But the day is coming, and I'll just give one example.
America is in a situation like it's never been in before. Always before, where we had a strong domestic manufacturing economy, it was back at the end of the Second World War, we were producing, manufacturing about 50% of what the world was manufacturing. At the present time, I think we're maybe 8% of what the world is manufacturing. And that amount is decreasing all the time. Recently, it was just last month, when President Bush was so pleased that there were 225,000 new jobs in the United States. And that's all you really read about, was all these great new jobs that the Bush administration had created. But if you saw a breakdown of those jobs, an awful lot of them were in government work. I think maybe 10% were in construction. But most of them, only 11% were actually in manufacturing, and most of them were in service jobs. And the thing is that you have to manufacture to be a prosperous country, and simply service, when people look after other people, is not a way to accumulate wealth. The wealth of a country is what it can produce. Why? Well, because if they go up, it would increase the amount of money we'd have to spend for interest on our massive national debt. And they just don't have the money to put that out.
Well, that's right. And if interest rates, if people stop buying our bonds worldwide, if someone's not buying those, that debt paper that we have to issue to cover our deficits, then if there's no one to buy that paper, then by definition, the value of that paper will go down, which means the bond values will go down. That's where, of course, many of your pension plans are heavily invested. Secondly, if the bond market goes down, the corollary of that and the automatic is Thank you.
Increasing the money supply, the two are counterproductive, and now the government has announced they're no longer going to publish the M3 figures. The M3 are the monetary figures about how much money there's out in circulation. Why do you think it is, Ron, that at this time in history, for the first time and ever since I can remember, and that goes back 50 years, they're suddenly not going to let the American people or the people, or international financiers know how much money we're creating?
Well, as we've said many times on the air, the debt system, when you've got a system that's based on nothing but fractional reserve banking and debt, as that debt gets larger and larger and larger, they raise the interest rates with one hand and say we're fighting inflation, but the other hand they're printing money faster and faster and faster because they really have no choice.
And they not only print the money, they actually just create it out of bank entries, and that's really what it's all about. You make a bank entry and you create $1 million. Right. People said that he said.
Great, so it'll be in your newsletter. Thank you.
My next newsletter, and you can just call in and ask for a copy of the newsletter. We'll be glad to send it to you.
Thank you very much.
You're more than welcome. Okay, and did you see that at all, Ron? Did you see that notice?
I heard reference to it, but I never saw the actual speech. So, yeah, I'm anxious to get your newsletter this month or whenever you send it out.
Yeah, we're having a little trouble with our printer, but as soon as we get the printer going, we'll have that newsletter out. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Ron Brown, who is one of the supporters of Radio Liberty and does help us. And we like to have Ron Brown on about one time a month just to talk about what's happening financially, because I think people have to begin making preparations for very difficult times financially coming here in the United States. The whole concept of globalization, taking away the tariff barriers, of course, they're pretty well one-sided. A lot of the countries won't let our products in, but of course we have to take their products. These are all arrangements that are made to begin to transfer the wealth of this country to other nations, because our leaders have a different agenda. They have a different dream. And it's not about strengthening the United States. Oh, they're not going to tell you that they intend to impoverish the American people. But that is the real plan, and if you doubt it, you need to, of course, get the Earth Charter, which we've talked about, and if you don't have that, we'll be glad to send you one. Point 10A talks about equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations, and what they really intend to do is raise the living standard of the average American to that of the Bolivian peasant. Well, anyway, these things are real. They're taking place very slowly, but they are taking place. And they're hoping the American people won't recognize this until maybe there's a crisis, and then they'll be so worried about the crisis they won't realize that they've been betrayed by the leaders of both political parties, whose loyalty is not to America, but to this globalist dream. Well, Ron, as far as the increase in the... Thank you. Control, and they by manipulating monetary rates in various countries, they can actually control the governments there. I believe that's on page 324 of Tragedy and Hope. Anybody wants to see the page, we'll simply get you a copy of that, and we quote that in my pamphlet, The History of Money. So the central banks certainly have been maintaining the price of gold very low by simply dumping their supplies, and they will announce we're going to sell 500 tons of gold here, and of course that's designed only to drive the price down. Okay, fine. Thanks very much, Bill. Appreciate your call.
Could we get Ron's phone number again?
Oh, well, let's get it out right now.
Okay,
Ron,
thank
let's get
you.
Out your telephone number.
Merry Christmas, Dan and Ron.
And you too, Bill. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Why don't you go ahead and get your telephone number out so people can get that information that you're offering?
Okay, anyone that would like to call and chat with me about gold and silver, my number is 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561.
Okay, fine. And we'll get that out a little bit later. And Ron has a great thing that he's written up just on the background of money. And I read it about a year or so ago. I thought it was very well done. Well, let's go to Marilyn, who's calling from Deer Park, Washington. Hi, Marilyn. How are you doing?
Hi. I'm doing fine. Good evening, gentlemen. And Merry Christmas before I forget.
Well, thank you, and to you, too. But you realize that may be very controversial in another year or two.
Tough. I'm going to say it anyway.
You should go ahead and say it. But I will have to admit, you know, I was watching Jay Leno the other evening, and he started his program. You know, he comes out as he always does, and he says, I want to tell you I'm going to say something very controversial. Merry Christmas. And, of course, everybody laughed because it's obvious to people what is taking place in America really doesn't make any sense. Who would want to take the Christ out of Christmas? Well, unless you listen to our programs, you're not going to understand that there really are secret societies.
Thank you.
Take a little time because there's an awful lot of hype, a lot of misinformation about the immediate confiscation of gold and silver, and they go back and compare it to 1933 when Roosevelt called it in, and of course we have totally different circumstances today than we had back in 1933. Back then we were on a gold standard, so when they declared the emergency and an executive order, what they were really doing is not confiscating gold so much as they were reneging on their promise to redeem the gold and silver behind all the gold and silver certificates. Well, they didn't do it on the silver till later, but on the gold certificates. So today we have totally different circumstances. Thank you.
With the people are buying and selling like mad in here.
No, we're part. You're in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Is the housing bubble begin to slow down, or is it things still frantic there buying?
I'm still seeing them, you know, like in this neighborhood where they're putting up these tiny houses where somebody will own a plot of land. And I don't know if they're trying to get themselves, you know, their mortgage paid off by selling it to a developer. Or whatever, but, you know, I'm concerned about this housing thing. And, you know, I don't know about buying a plot of land, you know, maybe out in the country, if you could get a foreclosure, if somebody had a foreclosure.
And walk away from whatever equity they had in that. What are your thoughts on that, Bill? Ron?
Well, I agree with you. In fact, what I tell people, especially people out in California, and by the way, I do have one client, I think you've talked to him before, Dr. Stan. He sold a house right near you in Salinas.
Oh, yes, and he moved to San Antonio.
Right.
He came to a meeting we put on. He was just so pleased. And he told me, you know, he'd followed your advice and my advice, and he has a beautiful home there in San Antonio. He says, I don't have to work for the next 5 years. And I said, you're young, you get yourself a job, and you don't...
Thank you. Got in the business back in 78. I saw what was coming. I read, and I was just so wrapped up in what was going on with the economy that I got into this business, and I sold all my house, and I put my money into gold and silver, and went into business in January of 79, and I was like a zealot then. I was just so convinced that gold and silver were going to explode in price. Silver was $5 at that time. Gold was around 192, and I was begging people to buy gold and silver. By March or April, silver hit $8, and the people I begged to buy it at $5 said, "Oh, Ron, I wish we would have listened to you, but it's too late." I said, "No, it's not too late. It's going to continue to go higher." And then at $11 in I think about July, you know, they said, "Oh, my gosh, we should have listened to you, but it's too late." Guess what? Those same people who wouldn't buy silver at $5 in January or wouldn't buy it in $8 in March and wouldn't buy it at $11 in July and wouldn't buy it at $15 or $20. Thank you.
His name is James H. Billington, and in his book, Fire in the Minds of Men, he talks about the revolution, the world revolutionary movement that began with the American Revolution in 1776 and continued to... Stand back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the stations you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY out across America and here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please don't call in unless we specifically ask for calls. And if you are listening on the Here's Help radio network and hearing a delayed rebroadcast, why, you won't be able to call in at all. But right now, we want to introduce our very special guest this evening. His name is Mr. Joseph A. Klein, and he's a practicing attorney who's actually attended Harvard Law School, and certainly he's written a fascinating book called Global Deception. Now, it's very late back where he lives. He's very kind to stay up, but it's just about midnight back there, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. But it's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, I really appreciate your staying up because I think your book is an important one. It's called The UN Stealth Assault on America's Freedom. And Mr. Klein, like myself when he was young, was a supporter.
Manipulated by people who were hell-bent on using it against the United States. So I came to write Global Deception in order to tell the whole story, not only about the UN's corruption that we read about every day in the headlines and the mismanagement, the need for reform.
Hold that thought right there with you just for a moment as we are going to have to take a quick break here, and then when we get back, we'll develop more of these ideas about the truth about the United Nations. Why don't you just go ahead and pick up the story there, Mr. Klein?
Okay.
Go right ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, in writing Global Deception, I did a lot of research and a lot of investigation into the writings of the UN supporters, Kofi Annan, his key advisors that I profile in Global Deception, and it became very apparent that they had the interest of building up a world government, as they call it in one of their documents, funded by taxes that they would enact on everything that you and I do in our day-to-day living, using the internet, sending emails, filling up our tanks of gas. Gas prices already sky high. They want to add taxes to that. Every time you take an airplane trip abroad, they want to put a tax on that. And the agenda is that the UN bureaucrats and world leaders like Jacques Chirac of France and multi-billionaires with a leftist agenda like George Soros and Ted Turner, they want to get the United Nations to the point where it has enough funding, $1 trillion a year they estimate that they could get in all these kinds of global taxes from us, and not have to come back and prove their worth to the member states in the budget deliberations. They want to get free of that, and I tell that story through their own words and global deception.
But don't they really want to, all this money so they can create a true global government, a one world government?
Yes, and they use that very phrase in a study that Kofi Annan commissioned a couple of years ago on how to raise independent sources of revenue. They call it innovative sources of revenue. They always use these euphemisms. But when you read it, they're talking about various kinds of global taxes, and the writer of this paper that went to the General Assembly talked about what it would be like to have taxes that were enacted by a world government. That was a phrase that was used in the UN paper. A number of years ago, another UN document talked about raising $70 billion a year from just internet taxes alone. And if you add up all their proposals, it comes to $1 trillion a year. Mostly it's going to be out of our pockets, because they're looking to the United States and to the American taxpayers as the source for the money they want to use to enact all of their wacky programs.
And of course, they want a global army, they want a global court, they want a global police force, they want a legislature, they want an executive. They want all the things that go with the government. And with that comes the loss of your freedom out there. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Mr. Joseph Klein, has written a wonderful book entitled Global Deception, going into the background of this move towards global government at the present time. And he's pointing out that they have a plan. They want to impose taxes on people in the world, but primarily on the United States, because we've got so much money. Thank you. Everybody, oh, of course, it takes government, a position, elected position, has to swear, whether it be at the state or the national level. So if that really is true, and these people have sworn to uphold our Constitution, why would they go to United Nations law? Why would they go to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights? Why would they go to other countries' laws to find out what our laws ought to be? I don't understand that, Mr. Klein.
Well, it is very puzzling, because if they are following the rigorous discipline of judicial interpretation and act like judges that they're supposed to be rather than legislatures, they're supposed to look at the text of our Constitution, understand the animating principles behind it, look at the history of the Founding Fathers and what they were trying to do, and apply the law as best they can to the current circumstances. But they take the easy way out. Some of these justices, like Justice Kennedy, goes every summer to Salzburg, Austria, to a global judicial conference, and he meets with his colleagues and courts around the world, and they become seduced into believing that the rest of the world, with their imperfect systems, and the UN, with its unaccountable global forums, know better than our own founding fathers. And it's just a very dangerous trend. I wrote Global Deception to try to get this story out, because through their own words, through the words of advocacy groups that are manipulating this process and taking these treaties,
Gorbachev.
Didn't he a communist?
Yes, he was. And probably still is, but he was a co-chair of the Earth Charter Commission, along with a man named Maurice Strong, who was a very powerful behind-the-scenes advisor to Secretary Generals of the United Nations going back 30 or more years, including to Mr. Kofi Annan. Now, Mr. Strong has had his own problems. He has been embroiled in some allegations related to the oil for food scandal, but he's an extreme environmentalist, although it didn't stop him.
Gobbledygook is that, and then it talks about the earth as if it is a sacred thing. What religion does this represent?
This is
Thank you.
Christmas, consume, enjoy the fruits of our labors, enjoy our freedoms, and their philosophy that you shouldn't do this, it's bad for the environment, it's wrong because you're doing too much, and we think we, Marie Strong and Gorbachev and all of these supporters of the Earth Charter think that you should be forced to give your money over to the causes that they think are deserving. Developed areas of the world, mostly in Africa, and many of these countries are unfortunately, for the people that live there, led by very corrupt officials. The head of this program and another one of the special advisors, along with Marie Strong, this is another one to Kofi Annan, is a professor by the name of Jeffrey Sachs. And he led this four-year study and made recommendations to the General Assembly that call for Thank you. kind of makes it very difficult to grow the economy and generate wealth when you can't touch the environment. You can't use technology without violating their principles. As you say, there's nothing wrong, and I think quite a bit that's right, with respecting the environment. In fact, our own Judeo-Christian tradition teaches us to do that. It teaches us to respect the land in which we live, but not to worship the land in which we live to the exclusion of human dignity and human freedom and the ability to grow and to generate enough. Thank you. There are countries in Europe, Holland is an example, where they're moving more and more into this area of euthanasia. Because for whatever reasons, in terms of opening up more space in hospitals for other people, or just a philosophy of curbing population and controlling population, those universal, in quotes, norms and laws, treaties that the Senate never ratified, and bring it into our courts and litigate. Now, this isn't something that I came up with in the middle of the night in a bad dream. This is in the documents that I unearthed in Global Deception, and I quote from. The subtitle of my book is, the title is Global Deception. The subtitle is the UN's Stealth Assault on America's Freedom. The word stealth is taken out of the Center for Reproductive Rights, a non-governmental organization that has a lot of power and a lot of influence over UN decisions in the whole area of abortion on demand, and they lay out a strategy, and they call it a stealth strategy, to get UN committees in their
Thank you.
A very dangerous thing because we seem to have more ruled by man than ruled by law.
And Thomas Jefferson, read some of his writings, he warned about the unfettered power of the courts to act like many legislatures without any accountability because they're not elected. He warned us about that. James Madison warned us about that. And it requires
Thank you. His information is absolutely correct. We've written extensively on this whole concept of population control, and you can go to our website at www.radioliberty.com and pull down my Population Control Agenda monograph. Written a number of years ago, but it's still very apropos and points out that these people have a different worldview. They think there are too many people in the world. They'd like to reduce the population from 6 billion to 2 billion. To 1 billion, to 500 million, maybe down to even 1 or 200 million. You say that's crazy talk, and I would simply point out we're dealing with people who have a different worldview, who put no value in human life.